Welcome back to the GCN Racing News Show. Coming up this week, Tadej Pogačar does it again and cements himself as the greatest rider in the history of our sport. But was this his most dominant Tour de France win ever? I'll be looking at the stats on that and casting my eye ahead to whether anything might change this time next year. I'll also wrap up the final week of the race, as well as an equally dominant performance at the Women's Tour of Poland. This week in the world of racing, we learned that Sepp Kuss was very lucky that netting had been put up on this corner. That was Kuss's second crash on that descent, and ultimately, that cost him the stage win to a flying Richard Carapaz. Thankfully, Kuss wasn't too injured, though. That could have been a lot worse. We also learnt last week that even when he's pushed himself beyond his limits, Mathieu van der Poel is still lucid enough to notice a tyre manufacturer on the finish line.
And in the very end, I see a Pirelli tyre next to me, and it's the one from Jasper. And it shows we never give up. Maybe the start of our tour was not good, but yeah, 1 and 2 on Champs-Élysées, I think that's pretty good.
What a finish that was to the final stage in Paris yesterday. More on that later on, of course. But finally this week, we learned that Tadej Pogačar has joined Merckx, Indurain, Hinault and Anquetil as the joint record holder of the number of Tour de France overall wins. Yesterday, he sealed his 5th Tour de France title from 7 participations, and it was arguably his most dominant yet. His margin of victory over Remco Evenepoel was 6 minutes and 26 seconds, whilst the gap back to 10th place Jordan Yeager was 33 minutes and 21 seconds. And those are the largest margins he's ever had in his 5 Tour de France wins. Now, that is likely to be skewed a little because Jonas Vingegaard crashed out. We will never know. But either way, his level of dominance is showing no signs of slowing down or waning. He now has 26 career Tour de France stage wins, having won a further 5 at this year's edition, but it could have been even more. He gifted Del Toro a stage on day 2. He could have ridden away from Del Toro and Evenepoel on the stage 15, but he was working for his teammate there. And he almost undoubtedly could have won the penultimate stage on Saturday as well, were he not working again for Isaac Del Toro. So 5 stage wins could easily have been 8. 26 career stage wins could easily have been 29. And we have this rather strange scenario really over 3 weeks, whereby the winner of the Tour de France did more work as a domestique for his teammate in third than the guy in third did to help his teammate win the race. Now, I'm not taking anything away from Isaac Del Toro. He deserved his 3rd place and best young rider jersey, and I'm sure that had he been required to do so, he would have sacrificed those results to ensure Pogačar won. But he wasn't required to do so, and that was because Pogačar was so dominant throughout the race. Did he have a moment of weakness? No, not really. And to me, it looked like he only went 100% on 4 occasions. Once on the Tourmalet stage, where he effectively sealed the deal on the overall, once in the individual time trial, once on Alpe d'Huez, and then finally on the last ascent of Montmartre yesterday, trying to hold onto the wheel of Mathieu van der Poel. In fact, I think Pogačar's current level of dominance is not defined best by the number of stage wins he had or the margin of overall victory, but by how much he's influencing the stages that he doesn't win. I've already mentioned Del Toro and Evenepoel's stage wins, but what about van der Poel yesterday? I'm not saying at all that Pogačar could have won yesterday if he wanted to. I don't think he could. But once he realised he was in a situation where it was nigh on impossible for him to win, he rode in a way that gave his mate, Mathieu van der Poel, the best chance of winning himself. So Pogačar put in a huge turn inside the final kilometre, without which van der Poel would certainly not have won. So Pogačar is dictating the entire Tour de France, even on many days when he doesn't win himself. Now, one more stat that I think tells a story. Pogačar has finished 1st in Tour de France stages more times than he's finished 2nd and 3rd combined. So he's got 26 stage wins, but he's finished 2nd on 14 stages and 3rd on 9 occasions. I know it's stating the obvious at this point, but he truly is a winner. So what's next for him? Well, given what we've witnessed over these past 3 weeks, Pogačar can do whatever he chooses to do. Nobody is close to him at the moment, and it's unlikely anybody will get close to him so long as he's motivated and driven. So for me, that's the bigger question. How long will Pogačar remain as motivated and driven to win as he is right now? Well, that's something only Pogačar himself can answer. What has he got left to achieve? Well, he's yet to win La Vuelta or Paris-Roubaix. I mean, he might tick one of those off in the next few weeks, but we won't know yet whether he's racing in Spain or not. He might want to be the first rider in history to win the World Championships four times, something he could conceivably do in the next 14 months. He might want to beat Cavendish's record at the Tour de France for stage wins, something he could conceivably do within 2 years if he really wants to. I mean, he may even want to equal or better Lance Armstrong's 7 Tour de France wins that aren't Tour de France wins. We simply don't know, time will tell. But right now, it feels like the only thing that can end the reign of Tadej Pogacar is Tadej Pogacar himself. Or maybe I'm doing everybody else a disservice. You just never know when the next superstar is going to emerge. Perhaps there's a new superpower emerging who we haven't even heard of yet. I doubt it, but it is possible. Anyway, let me know your thoughts on everything I've just said. Do you think anybody will come close to threatening Pogacar's supremacy in the next 2 years? Do you think he was right to work for Del Toro, even if it meant sacrificing 2 or 3 extra stage wins himself? Let me know in the comments section just below this video. Right, just before I move on from Pog, what about that ride up Alpe d'Huez? I don't think any of us have ever witnessed anything like that before. UAE team Emirates were actually on the ropes with illness sweeping through the team at that point, and there were even rumours that Pogacar himself was under the weather, and that's why he was wearing black shorts instead of yellow. Any thoughts like that were quickly quashed, though, when Pogacar attacked about 1 kilometre into the climb and set about closing a 3.5-minute gap. And not a gap to any old riders either. Richard Carapaz, Lenny Martinez, and Sepp Kuss. And yes, they could have ridden together more efficiently, but it still would have been tough to hold Pogacar at bay that day. So he rode up the 13.8 kilometres of Alpe d'Huez in 35 minutes and 26 seconds, breaking a 31-year-old record that many thought would never be broken. But he didn't just break Marco Pantani's record, he absolutely smashed it, taking 1 minute and 24 seconds out of it. Never before has the difference between Pogacar and the rest been so pronounced, really, as that day. The next fastest rider on the day was Remco Evenepoel, and he was 2.5 minutes slower. Although that still put him 7th in the all-time list on Alpe d'Huez, that according to Amati Pirelli over on X, with only Ulrich, Armstrong, Pantani and Pogacar himself ever having gone quicker. Now, the Strava segment page really emphasises the difference even more. The top 5 times are all from this edition of the race, but former leader of that segment, Sepp Kuss, is now almost 4 minutes back in 6th. That was from 2022 when Pidcock won the stage, and Pidcock's time is now 6.5 minutes slower than Pogacar's. I mean, stupid to compare, really, because they were different stages and very different scenarios, but still, that difference is crazy. How does Pogacar compare in age to the other riders who won the Tour de France 5 times? He's younger. Of course, a year and a bit younger than Eddy Merckx was for his 5th and final title, even more with Anquetil, Eno and Indurain. Pogacar is also a year younger now than Chris Froome was when he won the first of his 4 Tours de France, and a few days younger than Lance Armstrong when he won the first of his 7 that weren't wins. Which is bonkers, isn't it? Imagine if Pogacar now rides the next 7 Tours. Anyway, I have probably spoken enough about Tadej Pogacar. He wasn't the only person in the race. So I shall move on to the second place on GC, Remco Evenepoel. Over this last 3 weeks, he's made me and many others eat our words. I mean, I personally concluded, after watching him for the past 24 months, that he didn't have what it takes to compete with the best current stage race riders for 21 consecutive stages. And I was completely wrong. And what impressed me most was not his 2 stage wins, nor even his incredible riding in the last week of the race, but rather how he rode in the first week when he wasn't looking so good. There were a couple of occasions where he was distanced on a key climb, but rather than getting emotional or angry and losing big chunks of time, he stayed at the pace he knew he could sustain and he didn't panic. And that meant he lost very little time, or in some cases, no time at all. He actually came back. That was a level of maturity that I thought was exemplary from Evenepoel. The time trial win was expected, but no less impressive for it, but his road stage win in the second week was really the icing on the cake for him. I mean, there must have been a tinge of disappointment for the team that they didn't reach Paris with Lipovic, but this is the best result they've ever had at the Tour de France on GC, and also the best for Evenepoel too. I guess the question is, where does he go from here? And it's not just a question to him and for him, but also every other GC rider currently. They're all facing the same predicament. How many of your eggs do you place in the Tour de France GC basket when the best you can reasonably currently expect is 2nd on GC? Except perhaps for Paul Seixas. The 19-year-old has just become the youngest rider to even finish the Tour de France in almost 100 years. Nobody his age or younger has ever done better on the GC, in which he finished 4th overall. Now, he'll never be the youngest winner of the race, though. This time next year, he'll already be older than Henri Cornet was when he won the second edition of the race back in 1904. Since then, though, no teenager has ever finished in the top 10, let alone the top 5 of the race. Now, there wasn't really a single time when Seixas lit things up and set the world on fire, but he was better off for that. He is, by age, the least mature rider in the race, but he rode the most mature race. He was incredibly consistent, didn't make any silly decisions or silly attacks, he never cracked, and he used his team well too. Has he got much room for improvement? Well, from what I've heard, he can't be any more professional than he already is, so there's not much he can change from that point of view, but he does have age on his side. In theory, he's some way from his physical peak, so even if he just continues to do exactly what he has been doing for the last couple of years, he should still make improvements in power and fitness. Whether or not it's enough to bridge to Pogacar is another matter entirely. We'll just have to wait and see. Isaac Del Toro performed as expected, I would say, at least in my opinion. I think a lot of people thought he could finish on the podium, even while working for Pogacar. In the end, he really didn't have to do a whole lot for his leader beyond the Col du Tourmalet stage. He did have a wobble or two during the first part of the race, but in the end, he was solid when it mattered. Very easy to forget, actually, that was only his second Grand Tour, so he's now finished on the podium of his first two. Not many people in the history of the sport can claim that, especially at the age of 22. And having Pogacar as both a mentor and domestique is obviously a luxury most people don't have, but either way, I thought Del Toro was very impressive. The rest of the top 10 looked like this. Lenny Martinez finished 5th, an incredible ride really, when you consider he wasn't even going in fully focused on GC. And that also meant that France had 2 riders in the top 5 overall. And he was also 3rd in the Young Riders classification, which I guess just emphasises how good young riders are these days. Matias Gilmos and Juan Ayuso finished 6th and 7th respectively for Lille Trek. In the first half of the race, the Spaniard had looked the superior of the two, but the tables turned last week where Gilmos had found his best legs. In fact, his ride in the individual time trial on Tuesday was really quite incredible. Carapaz finished 8th on GC, but wasn't even really aiming for that. Going home for 2 stage wins and the KOM jersey will mean the most to him, especially since with 4 days remaining, there were no guarantees of either of those. He really is a Grand Tour specialist, isn't he? You could argue he was the second best rider in the race on the final mountain stages. Tom Pidcock managed to keep himself in the top 10, finishing 9th, but he was clearly on his knees by the end. Understandably so, really, given how much effort he put in during the middle week, where he was in more breakaways than he wasn't. And finally, Jordan Jaeger made it 3 French riders in the top 10, with his second consecutive 10th overall for TotalEnergies. So what then about the sub-classifications? Well, I've already mentioned Carapaz in the polka dots. He had quite the battle, really, with Paris-Panthe for a while, but whilst the Frenchman was more explosive in the sprints to the lines, he wasn't a patch on Carapaz on the long mountains. Arguably the most interesting, exciting battle, though, was for the green jersey. Mas Pedersen had done so much right in the race, but then seemed to get it completely wrong on stage 17 to Voiron. There, he effectively allowed Philipsen right back into the battle with some bad tactical decisions. Ultimately, though, he won it with brute force. And the fact that he sealed the deal by winning an intermediate sprint on stage 20 that came after the Col de la Croix de Fer tells you all you need to know. He was just incredibly powerful for the entire 3 weeks. Philipsen finished 2nd in that classification, but in the end was 84 points adrift. Pedersen is just the 6th rider in history now to have won the points jersey at all 3 Grand Tours. And finally, Lidl Trek won the team's classification by over 1/2 hour from UAE. And it was a competition that UAE clearly did want to win. They made some dubious decisions to do so, but ultimately they were thwarted by illness in their own ranks, but also an incredibly strong Lidl Trek team for the entire 3 weeks. Right, that just about wraps things up for the men's Tour de France this year. Stage winners in the last week were Carapaz, twice, Pogacar, Philipsen, Evenepoel and Van der Poel, again highlighting just how hard it is to win a stage if you're not one of the best riders in the world. Every single stage winner over that final week is either a Grand Tour winner, current or former world champion or monument winner, and in some cases, all 3. Just a couple of other notable points. There was no French stage winner this year, only the 3rd time in history that that's happened. However, there was also no Spanish or Italian stage winner, and that's never happened before in the Tour de France, nor has it at the Vuelta or the Giro. I guess more proof that the world of pro cycling is getting increasingly international. Gone are the days where the traditional cycling nations dominated. Okay, just before I move on, I want to say congratulations to Nelson Oliveira of Movistar. So in finishing the Tour de France yesterday, he now holds the record for the number of consecutive Grand Tour finishes. That was the 24th Grand Tour he's done, and never once has he pulled out. 501 stages and over 80,000 kilometres. Back to back, that equates to a year and 4 months of Grand Tour stages. An incredible feat, and also quite mind-boggling. Just before I move on to the other races, I want to say a huge thank you to everyone who made a purchase on our shop in July. And we've genuinely been bowled over by the level of support this year. The design team clearly did a fantastic job in 2026. Anyway, if you've been umming and ahhing and are still thinking of getting a t-shirt, camelback bottle or print, they are still available over at shop.globalcyclingnetwork.com or alternatively, just scan the QR code that's on screen now. Okay, going to move on to other races now, and specifically the Women's Tour of Poland. Now, this is not going to take particularly long. Stage 1 was won by Larina Wiebes. Stage 2 was won by Larina Wiebes. Stage 3 was won by Larina Wiebes, and therefore Wiebes also won the GC and the points classification. She's now won 13 races in 2026 from 27 days of racing, a hit rate almost as good as Pogacar himself. She is the absolute dominant force in women's sprinting right now and has been at this point for years. If anybody but Larina Wiebes wins a sprint stage at the upcoming Tour de France Femmes avec Zwift this year, it's going to be a huge surprise. Speaking of which, our big preview should be out for you on this very channel tomorrow, all being well. In other news, two riders are rumoured to be leaving Ineos Grenadiers at the end of this season. Firstly, the Belgian Laurens de Ploos, who's apparently going to Decathlon, and Andrew AJ August, who's supposed to be heading to Pinarello Q36.5. Both those reports coming from Dan Benson, who's got his own Substack with constant updates if you'd like to check that out. Right, that is all for this week. I'll be back next week to wrap up the opening three stages of the Women's Tour de France. So I'll see you then.